Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is Tom Conwell. Before I bring him on, I want to remind you that you can always get new regular episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. You're going to definitely want to check us out on Rockfin, because that's where you get all of our amazing premium content, and you can get our regular shows, and all the regular and premium content from every content creator there on Rockfin. We also have our merch store up. That means t-shirts, stickers, bags, and all kinds of great stuff. That link's in the description. And finally, I want to tell you about how you can protect yourself from harmful EMF radiation with EMF Harmonized. They offer protection from harmful electromagnetic frequencies for your phone, computer, tablet, and your routers. It's just a small disc that goes directly on your devices. With these discs on my devices, I don't feel as groggy. I sleep better at night, and I have more energy during the day even after spending hours in front of my computer and near my phone. You can also get their wristbands and body relief patches. Just use the link in the description to check out EMF Harmonized and protect yourself today. Tonight I want to welcome back to the show Tom Conwell. He has been an electronic technician with the U.S. Navy and Honeywell Inc. for 42 years, a biomedical engineer, meteorologist, and an HVAC engineering resource. He has a wide-ranging expertise with a keen awareness of physics, computer and internet software, and a broad knowledge of electronics and how it interacts with the paranormal world and UFOs. He studied databases as a forensic pattern researcher and has written three volumes of book series. They Are Here, Volume 1, 2, and 3, self-published a collection of blogs, Going Interstellar, completed earthquakes and UFOs, and has studied and researched UFO sighting reports from across the United States and given speeches about each of these subjects. He has assembled a map of UFO sightings, which has revealed many anomalies and is now an integral part of his research studies. Tom, welcome back. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, excellent. Good to be on with you again, Chris.
Yeah, it's good to have you back on. It's been a long time, and last time you were on, we discussed a bit about your book, UFO hotspots, interactions with nuclear facilities, and possible correlations between UFOs and earthquakes. And tonight, we're going to go even deeper. We're going to talk more about your UFO map, which I will actually pull up in a little bit, and this current climate of like pseudo-disclosure that we've been seeing in our mainstream culture. But first, really, it's been a while since you've been on. Remind the audience about yourself, your background, and what got you interested in these topics.
Okay. Well, I've been an electronic technician with the Navy. That's where I started. And with Honeywell for a total, the two together, about 42 years. So I got an opportunity to see a whole lot of weird stuff over the years. I was able to get into a lot of the rocket facilities in Hartford during the time when we were starting to get ready to launch the shuttle. So I saw a whole lot of really cool stuff, things that that aren't usually seen by people. And I got some pretty cool tours, too. But that was my time with Honeywell. And I spent it there. And I retired in 2009. And I was bored. Okay. That's the only way I say I was bored. Right. I was looking for something to do. So I got into paranormal investigating. That was a lot of fun. I don't regret a single second of that. I had some fun times doing that. And I had an opportunity during that to branch off into ufology. And I took it in a heartbeat, because I've always wanted to do something in that regard, but never knew how to get started. So my paranormal team was looking for looking for someone to talk about ufology and space and things like that. And when I accepted, I was able to do exactly what I wanted to do. I started out with writing blogs for the team page. And the blogs involved space and kind of written from a viewpoint that if we're on the Earth, what kind of problems do we have to solve in order to go to a foreign world? In other words, just the opposite of UFOs coming here. And then after I did that, shortly thereafter, I was able to put all those blogs together and have it create a story about my understanding of physics and the problems we had to solve in order to get to an alien world. And that book is this book here, Going Interstellar. And this was my fourth book. Rather than put that together immediately in a book, I just left the blog sitting there and would use them occasionally to do a talk somewhere. After I was done with my volume 1, 2, and 3 of They Are Here, then that book just sort of wrote itself. I just had to write intros between the different blogs, and voila, had a book. So yeah, that was kind of fun. But that's pretty much how I got into ufology. Always wanted to, always believed in that UFOs were visiting from another planet, possibly even another dimension, and always wanted to investigate. So that's my story.
Very cool. Now, with your experience at Honeywell, that you mentioned earlier that you've seen some pretty interesting things. Are you able to talk about any of the things that you've seen while you had your time there?
The very first time that the U.S. went into space and did an extended walk outside of the craft. They were doing pressure tests on the spacesuit that they were going to wear. And I was called down to do testing on recording the data from these pressure tests. And they were on great big reel-to-reel tape recorders. These reels were, if you put your arm out and make a great big circle, they were that big, okay? And they could move up to 180 inches per second. You figure something like that, moving ahead. I mean, that's like about 60 miles an hour. Right. That's really, really unbelievable. But that was one of the things I saw. And then they talked to me about the research going on in a killer satellite. That's all I can talk about with that one. That was pretty interesting. They shared some of the research in that, and utilized some of the recorders that I would repair and maintain for the company, and do large scale data recording on it. But that was kind of fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, with your experience with electronics, it gives you a little bit different insight into the paranormal world and how it kind of interacts and intersects with each other, right?
Absolutely, it does. Because I was into my very first years with Honeywell, I was into a study called metrology. Metrology is a science of measurement. In other words, if you were checking the checking the power in your fuse box, and you would use a meter that measured in the hundreds of volts AC, I would take that meter and compare it to a higher standard. That's metrology. So I was able to see a whole lot, or a whole range of different kinds of equipment. And it's really the basics of every piece of testing equipment utilized today. And because I saw the basics of every piece of equipment in the testing, the equipment that is put together by people to try to measure ghostly energy and all that stuff around it is a conglomeration of these various testing equipments. So believe me, I had from the get-go, I had a thorough understanding of what people were doing.
It seems like electronics and electromagnetics has a huge connection with a lot of not only paranormal things, but even in some aspects of ufology and these hot spots of strange events like Skinwalker Ranch, Blind Frog Ranch, these places that have strange electromagnetic readings when you bring this equipment out to kind of check on this stuff, right?
You bet. And I am intimately familiar with all the equipment that Travis Taylor was using. I was able to get my hands on it many times and do calibrations on it. So I saw all of the functions across all of the ranges, and I know what it can pick up and what it can't. And it's funny you would mention Skinwalker Ranch. They were trying to figure out, like the last three or four episodes, where the energy came from up over the earth, about 5 miles up, I think they termed it. And that was up over an area that was highly magnetic. And towards the very end, Travis noted that this was at the point of a huge meteoric strike millions of years ago. Well, if you think of it in terms of this, if a highly magnetized meteor were to strike the Earth and bury itself down in the Earth, it would act somewhat like a parabolic reflector. And this parabolic disc reflector would be, of course, by the nature of it striking the Earth, would be facing upward. And in all parabolic reflectors, you can calculate what the point of focus is on that parabola. In other words, to a small dish, there's a focus point that's up about 18 inches off of the base of the parabola. And that's its focus point, and that's where it collects the energy and sends it down into whatever may be looking at it, like a TV station or whatever. But when you have something that is that has struck and created a parabola that's Lord only knows 100 miles across, maybe the focus point for all of this energy is 5 miles above the Earth. And maybe that's what they're seeing. the result of any energy coming on, coming down and being reflected right back up to that point. And that's where all this stuff is happening from. But it's pretty interesting to think about. That's quite a show. I enjoy that show very, very much.
Yeah, it is. And I'm hoping to talk to those gentlemen again soon. I had them on my show a couple of years ago, but that would be great to talk again. Now, what do you think could be some of these connections with electromagnetics, the afterlife, and some of the high strangeness that we're seeing in some of these areas, how it all seems to be connected in some way? What would you say that is? I mean, there's got to be some energetic aspect to, you know, connect everything, even it seems to connect our consciousness as well.
It sure seems to. That's really an insightful question, Chris. I think that what's actually going on here is that the nature of ships traveling to our planet from who knows where, they are utilizing other dimensions. And if you think of these dimensions having sat there very much like a lake that hasn't been disturbed by the wind, and all of a sudden a ship is utilizing the dimensions and it comes crashing into our environment, creates a wake. And what does this wake do within our dimensions? It may do some pretty interesting things, such as open up portals, if you will, create sightings, cause things like people within the population to be awakened, see higher things. Everything is open, and you're absolutely right to saying it's all connected, because it indeed is connected. When we die, we go to yet another dimension, and that's unknown to us. But who's to say that whenever there's a thinning of the veil or a disruption in this energy, that it doesn't create a way for passed over souls to enter our environment? And if you're in the right place at the right time, you'll get some pretty interesting results. I've seen some things over the years with paranormal stuff that has been pretty crazy.
I was actually just about to ask you, through your years investigating the paranormal, what's some of the most profound things that you've come across or witnessed?
Okay. Let's see. I was part of a seance, meditative states that the people would try to get into. I personally wasn't able to do that, but I was to sit there and watch and figure out if I could sense some things happening that I wasn't aware of. During this seance, there were some contact with some people who used to live in that particular area. This was an area that was inhabited by the Shakers. If you're not familiar with them, it's like a brand of the Quakers, but they're a bit different. And a very highly spiritual group of people. But anyhow, during this seance, the team psychic and the team leader, who was also psychic, was describing this um, the energy of the people that they were seeing. And one of them was of a gentleman who may have committed murder on several other women, part of their cult, sect, excuse me, wrong word. And so, okay, they came up with this information. Of course, I had no knowledge of it, didn't see anything out of the ordinary. I was just a hanger on of there for the seance. Well, that night, myself and the team psychic went up to the attic, and we were sitting there, and you know, like you do in paranormal, you just ask questions of the air, you know, pretty much. And I remember the team psychic saying to me, "Hey, Tom, did you see this thing right in front of me here?" And I looked over towards him. I wasn't looking in that direction. I looked over towards him, and it looked like there was a fuzzy ball kind of floating in the air. I couldn't tell what it was, but the longer we stood there, the more clear this ball of energy looked. It was approximately the size of a medicine ball. Okay.
Wow.
And the longer we looked at it, the more defined that it became. So it got to the point where it was internally lighted, and there were blobs on the inside of this ball that, let's see, how do I do it? Do you remember what a lava lamp looks like?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, those blobs of stuff. Mm-hmm. That's what it looked like, okay, within this lighted ball. It's the oddest thing I've ever seen in my life. Well, I wasn't sure what was happening. I was looking at it like, what am I looking at? And the psychic said, "This is the person that I was talking to before, and he has trapped the spirits of the two women that he killed." And there were three blobs inside of this lighted ball that kept continuously moving around each other.
Wow.
I mean, this is the craziest crap I've ever seen in my life. This lasted for 6 minutes and 4 seconds. Just right there, this ball of energy right there. And then another time, I walked up to a house and I introduced myself to a lady. We're doing an investigation in a house that was formerly a Masonic temple. They were renovating. And the lady was talking to me, and, you know, we're just chatting about nothing. And she said to her daughter, her daughter was out sitting in the yard, and said to her daughter, "Why don't you run in the house and on the counter on my cigarettes and bring them out to me?" And I said, "Well, why don't you have that guy over there who just walked behind you, and have him do it?" And she said, "There's nobody in the house." So I saw a guy walk across who looked like a worker bee, you know. He had jeans on with a kind of pinafore top and straps over the top, and he was carrying a one of those old-time toolboxes that were made out of wood. And it was pretty interesting. I mean, I saw this guy walk across just like I was looking at another person.
Wow.
I thought that was pretty cool. But that night, I concentrated on the path that I saw him walk, and for the entirety of the night, utilizing a millimeter, which looks at EMF, I was able to track where he walked with a trail of EMF energy. And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that is definitely interesting.
Yeah. So that, you know, it was a couple of things that happened to me. Very, very unusual.
And I guess once you see those, I mean, you know, for me, once I had my first experience, there's no going back, you know. Experiencing in yourself is pretty much believing, especially, you know, the situation that I was in. I'm sure it was the same for you.
Yeah, you can't unsee something.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Now, I want to get to your UFO map. Now, while I pull this up, could you tell the audience a little bit about how this came to be and, you know, how you started this project?
Okay. Excuse me. I started out writing about East Coast UFOs. They Are Here, Volume 1. That was my first book. And that particular book, I realized that I was writing about each state and the kind of sightings that were in each particular state. And it bothered me that I didn't have a reference to talk about when I was writing about them. It's like I was leaving information out because I couldn't reference what was actually happening in the a description of the sightings that I was doing in the volume one. Well, that was about the time that I finished volume one, sent it in for publishing, and figured that I'm going to have to try to do something a little bit different in describing what is going on with this particular map. And when I'm doing volume two, which is going to be the central U.S. So I thought the only way that I could do that is with something visual. And visually, the only way I could do it is put pins on a map. Well, I started putting pins on a map and realized I had so many sightings in certain areas that I had to actually change the kind of pins I was using. So let's see. Let me get one that is pretty obvious to look at.
Now, you you can see the screen here, right? You can see the map?
Yes. Yeah,
okay,
I can.
Very
I can.
Good.
Okay. Look at Central Colorado, okay? And in Central Colorado...
That's actually where I'm at. I'm in Denver.
Oh, okay, cool. There are pins, a whole series of small pins up at the northern section of Colorado. And right in the area where Denver border would be, there's a few small pins, but there's mostly big pins. That's because there were so many sightings. So what I had to do is I had to change the key for the sightings. Take a look at the bottom right-hand corner. Black was fireballs that were seen in the sky. Red was spheres and yellow were triangles. When I started putting pins in the map, I realized there were just so many of certain ones, I had to change something. So I went to the large pins, and each large pin equal 20 little ones. So you figure, like in Denver, there's going to be a whole lot of sightings there, okay? And I had even bigger problem when I went out on the West Coast for Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Phoenix. There were so many sightings there that I couldn't use the large yellow, black, and red pins because it would just fill up a whole area. So I had to change to a different color. Look in the top left-hand corner of that picture, and it says white are 100 fireballs, orange are 100 spheres, and blue is 100 triangles. So there's a whole lot of sightings in some areas, and it's the only way that I could put them out. So that's pretty much what the map is and how to read it. As I was putting things on this map, certain areas became very interesting to look at because they were showing anomalies that I didn't expect to see. Areas, let me show you one in particular. Go to North Carolina and then go to the western edge of North Carolina where it borders Tennessee. And you will see a sea of little pins. I mean, millions of these little ones. And these pins, because there's just so many sightings there, spread out over a fairly large area. So I couldn't add big ones or anything else. So I just had to use a sea of the little pins. And when I did that, I realized that that's not a very high population there. In other words, a lot of these sightings are because of their cities. Well, in western North Carolina, eastern Tennessee, there's a couple of cities, Asheville in North Carolina, and well, forget the name of the city in Tennessee. Ugh, do a blank. But anyhow, in that area, there's a couple of fairly big cities, but nothing like New York City or Miami or Denver or Los Angeles. So there was no reason why we would have that many sightings in that particular area. Also noted that when I did my original book in volume one, that I made note of the mountains, the Blue Ridge Mountains there in western North Carolina, and the fact that there's a tremendous amount of things seen there in the sky. And even some stories about ships entering the mountains and going underground. So,
yeah, I want to talk about Denver for a second. You just mentioned ships going into mountains. I've heard plenty of stories about that here. But we have this huge military presence here underground as well, inside of mountains. I was just visiting an area yesterday where the Lockheed building is. And, man, that's a perfect area to have, like, experimental craft and UFOs in between these mountains and everything. And I'm wondering, like, for especially for areas like Denver where I live, do you think it's possible that that's a good amount of military experimental craft as well doing this?
Oh, sure. Sure. They're trying to reverse engineer everything they can get their hands on. And I think they've been fairly successful too. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of that. Nobody's talked to me about it, but I would not be surprised if there's a whole lot going on there that they haven't described to us. The stealth aircraft, right, that thing's 20 years old already. You just know that they have something there ready to reveal that we don't know about yet. So,
right. Yeah, I find it very interesting. Your East Coast sightings are enormous. It's like the whole East Coast of the United States is full of pins. You got Florida, New York, North and East Virginia, West Virginia. Man, every state almost on the east side of the country is like full of sightings. What do you think is going on that's different on that side of the country?
Population. That's the main thing. When you get a large area where with a lot of people in it, people are outside taking a smoke, walking their dog, and that's when they see things, and they report them to either MUFON or the National UFO Reporting Center, and they see a lot of things in the sky in these particular areas. But there's something you should be aware of. In between Boston and Washington, D.C., down US 1, Highway 1. When you drive that area, you go from one town to another town. There's no areas where you're just driving out in the country and there's nothing there or no population. It's filled with people. And that's what you're seeing, the result of most of that. It's pretty interesting stuff. But we have the same kinds of things in other areas such as Charleston, South Carolina, almost the entire state of Florida, but for a different reason. Now, let me talk about that now.
Sure, yeah.
I believe that there's most likely a underwater base or stopping point or something like that, right off of the Bahamas, down where the water gets very deep, and when these ships pop up at night, a lot of times you can see them from the shore of either Florida, South Carolina, or North Carolina, just hanging out 20 miles out, and you see lights just hanging out over the horizon.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Florida and South Louisiana, because I used to live in South Louisiana for most of my childhood. I lived in Southern Florida and Central Florida for about 10 years, and not until recently have I even seen UFOs. But I find it very interesting that you said, you know, something may be underwater there. And I see along the Gulf Coast of Florida as well, there's a lot of sightings. So that's very interesting.
Indeed. You have to understand the southeastern corner of Louisiana has New Orleans. And above New Orleans is Lake Pontchartrain. And there's a whole lot of sightings out in that particular area. A lot of population to see them, too. But wherever you have a large city, you have a collection of sightings. That's a given. Where the map was revealing is some of the areas, there weren't that big a city, yet there were pins up the wazoo. And there's some pretty interesting areas here. One of them is Northern Kentucky. In Northern Kentucky, there's just a sea of pins across Northern Kentucky. And that sea of pins extends from Lexington to Louisville. A lot of sightings there. And along the Ohio River also. In the state of Ohio, along the lake, Lake Erie, there's so many sightings, it's almost hard to imagine. And as you were to follow Lake Erie to the west and then turn north up into Michigan, you still get the same amount of sightings along the lake with a lesser population than Cleveland and Detroit. But there's still lots of sightings. You see the same things along the southern end of Lake Michigan. You look carefully at Chicago, and there's a whole batch of sightings there in Chicago, but it's a big city. You almost expect it. But that group of sightings goes all the way up into the upper end of Lake Michigan into Wisconsin. And it doesn't end. I mean, there's just sightings all along the lake there.
Have you seen any increases in sightings that you can note, in the time that you've observed this?
Let me give you a little history. Back around when I first started this thing, I looked at the databases from the 1950s where people would call into the database and add some information about what their grandma had seen. You know, I mean, there's a whole lot of that stuff. But as we got into the 2000s, then there was a marked increase in sightings. 2000 through about 2009, perhaps 2010, there were quite a few sightings, and it seemed pretty consistent every year. 2011 and 12, there was a huge jump in sightings. It went till about 2013 or so, and then it dropped off a little bit to about 2017, 2018. Now, I did not include the latest data here on this particular map, This map was made when I wrote my books.
Right.
Maps, if I were to do another map, I would see pretty much the same thing again. They'd be in the same areas. So that's why I'm holding off doing another map, because I'm not so sure that I'm going to find any more data than I already have.
Right.
This was pretty revealing when I did this one.
Oh yeah, definitely. I would have never expected some of these hotspots and the empty zones. I mean, you got Nevada and Utah in this area is almost empty, and that's like, you know, what you would expect to see full of UFO sightings, you know, Area 51, but almost all of Nevada is pretty much empty except for that little corner there. And then it's the East Coast that's really booming, and you know, Middle America and the West Coast is the California coast is pretty booming, Seattle, but you go to the a little bit towards the center and there's nothing. So that's very interesting. I wouldn't have expected that. Yeah. Now, before we move on from this map, is there anything else that you'd like to point out or discuss?
You mean relating to the map?
Yes, relating to the map.
Okay. Let's see. Just a comment. When you're talking about Central Nevada, there's not a lot there.
There's not enough to begin with. It's pretty empty. Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's not a lot of people to see sightings.
Yeah.
Now, perhaps if there was a city there, you'd see a whole lot of sightings, but there's no one there to see the things. So, but when you get over to the, and I forget the name of this area, over in the western section of Nevada, up in the hills, there's a huge lake up there. I forget the name of that. Forget the name of that, darn it. There's a big collection of sightings there. Mm-hmm. And there is, because there's a lot of people that go there for vacations in the summer and in the winter.
Yeah, that is really cool. This map is very telling, and I'm glad we brought it up here so everyone can take a look at it. So let's move on to what's going on in our mainstream news and the mainstream media with all the talk of UFOs. You know, it's been since 2017, really, but it's really picked up a lot. We've got a lot of, you know, big players when it comes to well-known names talking about UFOs now, you know, in our mainstream media, our government's bringing it up. And it's all coming at a very strange time. I think it's very interesting to pay attention to. I'd like to get your take on what could possibly be behind it. There's a lot of theories. Some people say, you know, we just want to advance our space force. We want to announce some toys. Other people say we're trying to get ahead of some imminent event that could possibly happen. And others just think that it's all misinformation and, you know, we could be heading for some kind of psychological op or something. I don't know. What do you think?
Okay. Well, I think that they realized the government realized the writing's on the wall and they can't keep a lid on it any longer. They have to start saying something. So what they did based on the report that was sent out June 25th, they said, oh, geez, it could be Russia, it could be China, but it could be something else, you know, maybe
could be swamp
we
gas.
Don't know, we aren't sure, you know, veritable nonsense, but, that's pretty much their first foray into what they think is going to be happening. And they know that they're going to have to say something eventually, and that's their first step into it. Actually, the first step was releasing a couple of those the Navy videos that they never ever would have released. And that was pretty interesting. But slowly but surely, they're going to be expanding their search and expand, you know, just give a whole lot of lip service to what it is they're doing and how hard they're looking and everything else. But they already know that we've been contacted. They've been contacted, and they just don't want to say it yet because they aren't ready. Now, why aren't they ready? And another question. I think that there's probably a faction within the government that still thinks that the people will go are crazy or not be very welcoming to an alien race. I think there may be some of those people still around, but I think there are fewer than someone's holding out for. I think someone is using that as a reason not to reveal anything, but I don't think that that is really valid. I think people would be very welcoming because I think that most of the numbers now, people believe that there are planets that are inhabited, and these planets, many of them have sent emissaries to our country, to our world, excuse me, and they are making contact with the governments of the globe. So I think time is nigh. We are going to know sometime fairly soon. I hope it's before I pass on, let me tell you, because I put a whole lot of effort into this. But yeah. If that's not the case, then somebody in the government is winning over, and whatever. It would be unfortunate, but the people of the world are ready.
In some aspects, it's kind of being painted as a threat, it would seem, in some aspects of the portrayal through the media. To me, I'm not too sure about that. It seems like if they were, they could have wiped us out a long time ago, unless we were like some kind of long-term experiment or something. I don't know, which is very possible. But what do you think? Do you think there's some imminent threat here from this UFO phenomenon?
No threat. Excuse me. No threat. Threat at all. I think that they're all benevolent beings. Maybe somewhere there's a civilization who are a bunch of idiots and you know, just want to attack. But I don't think that that is what we're going to find when we get out into the cosmos. I think people who have gotten to this level are loving, have been awakened pretty much, and are very benevolent beings. And I think that's what we'll see.
There's plenty of researchers and good friends of mine even that believe wholeheartedly that there are already extraterrestrials that walk amongst us. They kind of intermingle amongst the population, and we would never be able to tell because many of them either look exactly like us or are able to disguise themselves like us or whatever they're doing to appear like us. What do you think? Do you think that there are extraterrestrials that already are walking amongst us?
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised if there are over a million. I think that they're in every aspect of our society, from Skid Row right up to the ruling class. And they want to know about us, and that's the best way to do it. Put their emissaries where they can learn about us and figure us out and know what we're capable of. I think the writing was on the wall about 70 years ago when we lit off the first nuclear weapons. They were scared to death that we were about to take that into space, and we would be a target, perhaps a wild card that they couldn't control. And they had to come to us. They had to find out about us and learn about what it is that we're likely to do. And I think that's what they did many, many years ago. They found that the best way to learn is by living with us. Now there are many contingents of them that are living underground, living underwater. I wouldn't be surprised if there were some on the moon, although I'm not sure about that anymore. A lot of those areas on the moon, I think, were either destroyed or attacked some time back by some interstellar war or something like that, because I don't think that they exist anymore. I could very well be wrong, but I would not be surprised if there were some on Mars, underground most likely, and perhaps even a small contingent of ships circling one of the bigger planets like Jupiter or Saturn. It's not like that's far away for them. You know, they could probably get here in about 40 minutes.
Yeah. Now, last time we talked a little bit about how they've had in the past instances where they've shut down nuclear facilities, and they've even had interactions with earthquakes. And recently I've done some research, and I've been talking to other researchers who've looked into this, their connection with volcanoes and how they're spotted near volcanoes. I'm wondering if this is anything you've looked into. I know we talked about their connection with possible earthquakes before, but it seems like they're interested in some of these major earth-changing things that are occurring on our planet, like earthquakes and volcanoes. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they. If you were a geologist and you went to a strange planet, the first thing you would want to do is study the Earth, the ground, the planet, to see how stable it was, and to see if it could be part of a extinction event. And I think they're always looking into that, especially the volcano portions. I don't think that earthquakes could be an extinction event. In that, I'm referring to extinction for the entire planet. Volcanoes absolutely could be, and they are constantly looking at that. They're watching our tectonic plates and how that interferes with creation of mountains and so they're looking at everything that has to do with the planet that is to protect the planet, so that they get a handle on what could potentially happen and put the kibosh on it in case something very bad were to happen, like multiple super volcanoes or something like that that would create a nuclear winter. You know, you can't have that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, whenever we discuss things like this and you look at how they, you know, shut down nuclear facilities, it seems like they have at least our planet's best interest in mind. It makes me wonder if the human race could possibly be, you know, some kind of experiment that they check up on every once in a while, that they may have seeded life on this planet, and they don't want to see it destroyed or us destroy ourselves because they have an interest in it. What do you think about that?
Oh, absolutely. I've always been of the belief that they tinkered with our DNA many, many, many years ago and created us. And we are the great experiment. Once we started figuring out how to do things like nuclear bombs and stuff like that, then they got a little bit nervous and they started looking a little closer, and they experimented on us by shutting things down and knowing how they can control things if they had to in an emergency. And they were pretty successful in that. They shut some things down in North Dakota and Montana and South Dakota. It's several different times, and they have some great success in doing that. Now, I'm not sure what they did, and that I think what they may have tried to do was interfere with our generation of electricity in that area, which would indeed shut everything down. But they got so good at it that they were able to figure out how to retarget some of the things, and that scared the crap out of us and got us to pay attention to what we were doing.
Do you think that us as human race is ready to, hear that there's not only life beyond our planet, but it could exist just beyond the spectrum of our vision? It could be an interdimensional phenomenon and connected to paranormal and life after death and everything. Do you think that us as a species are ready to understand this?
I think that if we were to have it revealed to us that they made contact with another civilization and that they are able to exchange messages every 6 months to a year or something like that to get us really used to hearing about it, I think that would go a long way. If we were to just describe a bunch of ships landing, that could freak some people out. They'd have to do it slowly. They'd have to do it slowly, get everyone on board and thinking about the next message, especially if the messages are uplifting in any regard. And then everybody in the entire world would look forward to the next one.
Yeah, if anything, this mainstream disclosure is getting people to look at the subject who haven't, and maybe getting a few individuals more open-minded if they weren't before. I have seen a little bit more of that, which is encouraging. But it's definitely something to keep a close eye on, because I think we're living in very interesting times. And Tom, I want to thank you so much for coming on again. Before you head out tonight, let everyone know if they're interested in finding out more about you and getting your books. What's the best way for them to do so?
Okay. My books are available via Amazon. You can search for my name and the name of the books, and you'll find them there. There's a total of 5 books. They are here, volume 1, 2, and 3. Going Interstellar, which is a collection of blogs and describing the physics involved to get craft to do some of the things that we see in the sky, and then Earthquakes and UFOs, and that is my most recent book, where I looked at UFO sightings and where major earthquakes occurred, and I was trying to correlate whether the earthquakes were indeed attracting the UFOs, if the UFOs were there already, or just trying to find out something about the UFO and whether they were going to the major quakes. But Amazon.com, you can search for my name. I write under the name of Thomas W. Conwell, C-O-N-W-E-L-L. The other option is you can write me directly, and I can send you out a book, and I'll sign it for you. And I'm best contacted via my email. That's tconwel2@nycap.rr.com. So.
All right. Awesome. Well, Tom, thank you so much again. Fantastic information. And we'd love to have you back on in the future.
Love to. Love to. Thanks a whole lot, Chris. Great talking to you again.
Yes, definitely. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We will talk again tomorrow.